Hello and welcome to what is now Season 5 of Pebble in the Pond podcast. My name is Sam Stewart and I am the CEO of the Australian and New Zealand Mental Health Association. Each year, ANZMHA hosts several leading mental health conferences which give us the opportunity to connect with incredible industry leaders, lived experience speakers, researchers, academics and frontline workers as they share fascinating stories and projects which are changing the face of mental health within our community. Listen in as we go one-on-one with these inspiring people and dive deep into their work. It is truly a privilege to bring you their stories. Our podcast episodes may contain content which could be triggering for some people. If you need support, please contact Lifeline on 131114 or visit the Get Help page on anzmh.asn.au. Join us for Pebble in the Pond each Tuesday and let's get into Season 5. Educator, truth talker and natural disruptor, Peter has a strong background in training and consulting and a profile in mental health and suicide prevention. In today's episode, we speak about Peter's presentation at the 2023 Australian and New Zealand Addiction Conference on the impact of the current rise of vaping and e-cigarettes use in Australia. Every state has different rules and regulations about vaping use, and it's the lack of education and information that is seeing consumers ingesting quite dangerous toxins, as well as children and young people having easy access to vapes. Thank you, Peter, for a very interesting yarn, and look forward to sharing this with you. And I also want to make a special mention. Peter is probably the biggest supporter of all our conferences, and we thank you for that, Peter, and thank you for the episode. Peter Dampney, thanks so much for joining me, and thanks for spending some time with me. I look forward to talking to you.
Thank you.
Having a yarn. I mean, I've crossed paths over so many conferences. You're probably the most attended person at our conferences in the history of conferencing.
I'm a frequent flyer.
You are a frequent flyer. Frequent we don't have flyer. A program, but if we did, you would be platinum.
Oh, wow. There's so many compliments in there. I just don't know which one to take first.
You would be platinum. You'd be the only one, but you would be platinum.
I'd have some pretty good company just sitting up the front of the ZMH plane.
Well, imagine
right
the lounge.
Up the front.
Yeah. Oh. Imagine the lounge before
Beautiful
you get on.
First class.
Well, I'd be there, maybe.
Yep. Okay.
But anyway, hey, this is going to be fun.
Yep.
So I've seen you at a lot of our conferences and had a chance to have some cool conversations.
Yep.
You're always such a bubbly personality. Oh. I can't wait to have a chat to you about some cool things, but some pretty serious things too.
Yep.
So if you just want to give a bit of context to our listeners, what are you doing? What are you doing in the space of mental health and addiction?
Yeah. No, thank you. Apparently I'm a platinum when it comes to mental health and suicide prevention. So I've been mainly in the space for the last 6 or 7 years as an educator, and my real big passion is about educating people about how to have conversations about all different things associated with mental health and suicide. And I like to refer to myself as a generalist in that I think we do so much siloing in this sector or system or whatever S word you want to call what we work within. And we can learn more by listening to other people and collaborating with people across different spaces. So that's a big passion area of mine. I come from an educating background and that I used to be a high school teacher, got out early for good behaviour, served my sentence.
Good.
And now I work with educating adults. And I'm a bit of a disruptor in the sector in that I like to, you know, tell people what they need to hear, not necessarily what they want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that causes some awkward situations, but I like living in the awkward. And I enjoy dwelling in that space because I think that's where the real interesting stuff happens.
They say that's where the growth is.
Yes. Well, I think so too. And I'm privileged that I come from two parents who were both nurses. So my mother was an aged care nurse and my dad is still a mental health nurse, and I learnt a lot from them.
Yep.
And my father is now very irritated that I'm now working within his sector and educating him sometimes. So there you go.
Perfect.
Oh, how the cookie crumbles.
Yes. Okay. Well, listen, your parents are welcome to our conferences anytime
okay,
as well.
Okay, good to know.
They won't be platinum, but they're more than welcome.
Well, they need to know where they sit in relation to their daughters. That's very important.
Listen, you consult, you get bought into organizations to companies to mm-hmm. come in and help them around? What's an example?
Oh, look, a lot of the time it comes down to communication. So a lot of the time I come in and deliver some mental health first aid training because that's one of the big things that I'm known for. But it's interesting that you come in 2 days, talk about mental health, and people realize, oh, wow, this is really about communication. Mm. This is really about connection, and this is really about how we interact with each other in this space. And so a lot of the time I get invited back into workplaces after they've sussed me out and gone, oh, yeah, okay, well, I think we actually do want to do something about how we operate here. And we get to have some really cool conversations about, you know, how we do self-care, how we balance life and work, and fun things that we can do and creative things that we can do as well. So, but I'd say the big thing that it comes down to is communication and connection, and realizing that if we're going to be in a workplace, whether that's virtual or in the office with other people, we might as well have a good time and feel safe while we're in that space.
It's becoming quite an important topic, but also one that's getting a fair bit of attention as it relates to workplace mental health, but also mm-hmm. wellness.
Mm-hmm.
So spinning it and flipping it to not just ticking the boxes mm-hmm. and covering your butt, but also actively making a policy or trying to become the employer of choice based on the goodies around
yeah.
trying to care for people beyond just the work.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that it, and a lot of the time in some of the sessions, people say, oh, but we don't have a legal requirement to do that, or that wouldn't stand up in work cover. And I go, if we're just measuring how we make people feel by that, then yes, we're meeting some of our obligations as an employer in a workspace, but we can also be doing a lot more.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think it's we've all learned things from COVID.
Yeah.
There were so many silver linings. There was a lot that sucked about it, but there were silver linings that we actually realized we'd like other human beings some of the time, if not a fair bit of the time. We'd like to connect with them. We'd like to collaborate. We'd like to be creative. But we also want some autonomy about how we work and how we do things and how we live our lives. So I think it's a really interesting time to be in the space at the moment, because workplaces are grappling with some of the biggest changes to the whole workplace culture that we've ever lived through.
Yeah.
This idea that people are suddenly like, wow, we can do things in different ways that we never would have imagined before. And some workplaces initially tried to squeeze people back into pre-2019 bottles. We're like, can't make this fit. I just can't put them back in exactly how yes. I wanted them to. And they're saying, oh, Peter, we're back to pre-2019 levels and restrictions and people in rooms. And I'm like, yeah, but people's mindsets aren't back in that. So it's an exciting time to be alive.
And what do you think this is heading on that front with regards to workplace? Do you think we're ever going to get, it'll never be the same?
Because we've all changed.
Yeah.
I hope. Like, I mean, obviously, as I said, a lot about COVID did suck. And I was running the workshop just before, and I was saying to people, you know, the novelty still hasn't worn off about how amazing it is to physically still be in a room with other people
yeah.
and chat face to face. And I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, it's something that we took for granted that we could come together, you know, going to live music, hugging people, that
yeah.
we took for granted. So, yes, I think there's that. But also I think that people realized, I want to be able to take my kids to school, or I want to be able to have time for myself, or, you know, have that life-work balance. And so, yes, whilst let's be happy that some of those really sucky things have gone, let's not forget that we did learn things as well. And that applies to many, many workplaces.
Tell us an important topic that I want to touch on is vaping and where this is heading.
Good segue.
We're trying to see states approach this, federal government approach this. No one really knows, I don't think, what's going on with it.
No.
One thing we do know, I don't think it's really that great for you. Is that true?
Yes. So, I mean, there's lots that's not really great for us. You know, there's many substances of choice out there. The fact of the matter is, it's loosely said that we know that it's safer than traditional cigarette smoking, but then there's a lot of brackets around that that's like, but we don't actually know for sure yet. And for me, just saying that something is safe, even by a margin, than tobacco smoking, isn't a great advertisement. So it's not right. evidence that makes me really excited as a human being. Go, oh, well, if you're saying it's safer than nicotine or a cigarette, yeah. I'm there.
So they reckon it is safer.
Look, that's where the jury's out, okay. and that's the situation. And we've really got, and vaping's about two different groups. So vaping's been around for about 10 years. And traditionally, the whole idea of e-cigarettes is this idea that it was created as a smoking reduction or cessation tool, right? Yep, so this idea
to wean
that
off.
To wean off, you know, you can taper off, you can do it. So that was the idea originally. Now, that idea was also highly marketed and promoted by a lot of people that had a lot of money from big tobacco. So there is a motive there, right, to market that in that way. But there are many clinicians throughout the world who will argue to say, well, if I can reduce someone's use to go from X amount of cigarettes today to less nicotine, then that's a better thing. And you can't argue that, but that's the one group of thought. The other school of thought is, okay, let's just make these really wacky vape mod machine things that you can get disposable ones, you can get really cool Hello Kitty pink purple ones, and let's just market it to young people. And it just be actually not about the nicotine, but the cool flavors like cookie dough and peach and watermelon and chocolate and all that sort of stuff. So to me, they're two separate groups, they're two separate cohorts, and they're two separate reasons why people would choose to vape.
Right. And vaping includes e-cigarettes?
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, and that's the thing is that people will call it a vape, an e-cigarette. It often gets, you know, sometimes pulled into that whole idea of an inhalant, but it's different to, say, chroming or something like that. Usually what defines a vape or an e-cigarette as one of those things is the heating particle in it.
Right.
So it's engineered usually with a lithium battery or some type of cheaper battery even, and it lights up, it heats, and it creates that essentially not a modern form of the, you know, cigarette, in that it heats up that vapor and you inhale as an aerosol kind of substance into your lungs.
So the flavor they put in them is a liquid?
Yes.
And that just gets warmed up by the... By the battery?
Yeah, by the battery.
And the smoke comes in out of the end. Is that how it works?
And so we've had situations of even things like accidental explosions, particularly in disposable vapes, because they're often very dodgily made.
Right.
So, you know, we hear enough about phones and adapters and cords randomly exploding, right? Let alone things that have got this battery that lights like a heat device. And it's a flammable device that people are often carrying around on them now as well. So, yes, it's the heating device that makes it what it is.
Okay. And is that, once it's turned on, does it constantly heat it and then the smoke only comes out once you suck it? Is that how it works?
So there's different types of off and on mechanisms depending upon the vape. The problem with the cheaper models is that that's not as easily controlled and there can be lots more faults in it too. But essentially, and you could argue to say that it's much more efficient or fast than a traditional cigarette in that you can walk out of a building, glass door slides open, you can click on the vape device and you can be inhaling much quicker than you would on a traditional cigarette.
Right. And the volume that you consume through a vape, is it because you can't see the end of the cigarette? Is it like the volume a lot more than what people would typically consume?
Yeah, look, so, and you can definitely have a look online and see the differences in different types of vial. But so, for example, a disposable vape that most young people will use, they go through in about a week in terms of the flavor, and that's usually the life of the battery and all that as well. The more expensive reusable vape devices, they can be charged just like a mobile phone, right? So they actually can have a rechargeable battery in them as well, and they can last a lot longer. So it's the actual little vial, and that vial can differ. And so people can essentially, if they have a reusable vape, they can be going through that vial multiple times per week if needed.
Wow. So is the issue we're facing with vaping as a society, is it with the initial e-cigarette option to wean them off smoking, or is it the new whiz-bang flavors coming with all sorts of chemicals in it? Is that the one that we're worried about?
Look, it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
Because you know, yes, we, so TGA, so the Therapeutic Goods Association in Australia, has not approved the use of vapes as a withdrawal method, right? So it's not saying that this is not evidence-based.
Right.
But you can go see your GP in Australia, obtain a script, and then you can legally purchase nicotine either as a powder or as the juice form in order to put into a vape.
Right.
So the GP, the idea is in that avenue that the GP talks with you about different ways that you could quit, and that's how it's set up. Now, saying that, yes, you can go to your GP and get a script, but you can also go online via many of the vape websites. So we'll actually have it inbuilt in there that they can arrange for you to have a chat with one of their doctors who will write you up a script. So it's all like a one-stop shop. So that's one situation. The other situation, I guess, the problem that we're seeing with the majority of young people that are vaping is that we just don't know the types of chemicals that they're ingesting. When they have been tested, even if they do say they don't contain nicotine, they quite frequently have very high levels of nicotine, to the point where it's said if they had high levels of nicotine, it would actually burn their throat. So many of these disposable vapes will actually have, as one of the chemicals in them, a cooling agent, so that the person ingesting it or inhaling it doesn't actually feel just how much nicotine is going into their body.
But they're still getting that amount.
They're still getting that amount because, and you could argue in saying, well, that's the whole idea of the flavors, isn't it? That a lot of the time people will use a flavor to hide that nicotine, even for people who are maybe going down that e-cigarette route or trying to reduce their smoking as well. So the issue is the lack of transparency. And that's a real, so each country around the world has different rules and laws about vaping. Australia's the same because we like to complicate things, and every state and territory has different rules and regulations about vaping use. But unfortunately, there's lots of loopholes. There's lack of information and lack of education that whilst there are certain regulatory bodies in place and rules in place, there's still lots of avenues where people can be ingesting quite dangerous toxins.
The access for kids, people to get their hands on these things it seems very easy to do.
It is. Yep. Yeah. So
how are they supposed to get, like, I thought these were only supposed to be sold at certain shops, not promoted. Is that how it was?
So ideally, that's the idea. So legally, a vape store in Australia is not allowed to sell to anyone under the age of 18. They're also not supposed to put promotional material about any of the vape content, juice, mods, machinery outside. But there are so many vape stores now that I think it would be impossible for a body to be able to regulate each and every vape is doing. My parents have said to me that their local news agent sells vapes. So it's now proliferating into different spaces. But the majority, or the way that the majority of young people access vapes, is not in a shop environment. It's either going online and purchasing them. I actually, for the purposes of the workshop today that I delivered about vaping, went on this morning and just to see what I could get. And I had to just declare that I was over the age of 18 and ticked a box.
And you would get it delivered.
Yeah. But really, a lot of the time, it's either other adults or peers buying large quantities and then on selling them. But also, a lot of the time through TikTok, Facebook, WhatsApp, Snapchat, different types of social media sites where you can just arrange a meetup and buy, and you don't know what you're buying. But you know you're buying some vapes, and usually the disposable vape kind.
Right. And these are the same ones that were only supposed to be for people that were either trying to wean themselves off cigarettes?
Usually different.
Okay.
So usually the ones that are being sold completely beyond the regulation measures are the cheap, disposable, much more harmful ones from China. So, for example, they cost about $1 to make in China. And then dealers here in Australia, and I say dealers because essentially they are selling something illegal, selling them for $20 or $25.
Right.
So there's a big profit in it. And whilst that profit exists, there's, as with any other kind of substance, yeah, it's going to happen.
And the actual refills, I gather they'll be pretty making money on those as well, right?
Yep. And I mean, yeah, and you only need to see the amount of vape stores opening up throughout Australia to say, okay, this is a market. There's a market in this. There's enough people buying this product to say, wow, a large section of the population are vaping.
Let's talk about the addiction side of things for kids or for young, for adults as well.
Yep.
Is it addictive?
Well, particularly for those disposable vapes that secretly have nicotine in them, then definitely, right? And because we know that that's addictive. Not every person who smokes a vape is going to get addicted to it, but those who are susceptible or are high risk for developing an addiction are very likely to use it in a way. But it's also understanding that we don't have the evidence yet to know that even if someone's only using it socially or recreationally, that it could still have a damaging impact upon their health, because we just don't know enough. You know, it's like, well, where do you draw the line, you know, with, okay, that level of 8,000 chemicals in your body is okay, but that is not. So I think it's the same. We know a lot more about cigarettes and nicotine, and we know now that, you know, any of that in your body is not great, but we don't know enough yet as an equivalent for vaping.
And the other issue that you mentioned earlier was the fact that you don't know what you're buying from people. You don't know what it's got in it.
No, exactly. So it's quite frequently, particularly with the disposable vapes, is that it will say on the outside, you know, oh, no nicotine, or will not list nicotine as an ingredient. But of course, if you're trying to get stuff in illegally from overseas, you're not about to say, hey, Border Security TV show, I think you should really profile the opening of this box because this definitely doesn't have nicotine in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But other than nicotine, like I heard on some news channel that there was things like a chemical used to euthanize fish or something, and some other chemicals that get put in these things. Of the 52 that they tested or something, every one of them had some of these chemicals that were... Yeah.
Well, there's like 8,000 different chemicals that are used in making vapes. Like you might,
is that right?
Yeah, and you might not be lucky enough to, you know, wow, that's a big vape that would have that many in it. But, yeah, it's still chemicals. And, you know, some of them are related to certain types of cancers. A lot are related to the development of nodules and things like that in your lungs. So, yeah, ingesting that amount does sound a little bit totes dodge to me.
And so what do we think are some of the solutions for this? We're seeing Queensland trying to combat it. We're seeing other states trying to do their best. The federal government knows that this is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
What's the solution to try and get on top of this, or has it gone too far?
Look, it's interesting that some politicians say that you know, it's out of the bag now, like we can't stop it. This is what's happened. And to a degree, yeah, like it's a lot out there. For me, there's probably three big things that we can do. And for me, it's just about, if it's out there, we still want to try and keep people safe and also have their best interests at heart. So for me, the big three things are advocacy. So if someone wants to quit or someone wants to reduce their use of a vape, and we need to remember it is a substance, that we support them.
Yep.
And unfortunately, we don't have a lot of services yet that are specifically developed to assist people to ease off vaping. There is a lot of comparison with, say, Quitline and different types of tobacco reduction things, but we need to have more in that. And we need to understand that there's lots of other underlying mental health problems associated with that too, and lots of psychosocial stuff too. So advocacy. Next one is education. And I think, you know, we particularly hear lots of people say, oh, but it's safe, it's more clean, it's more okay. Yes, we don't know yet though. There's lots of brackets and asterisks over that. So for me, it's about actually educating people. Well, just like any substance, like coffee is a substance, alcohol is a substance. With any substance that we put into our body, we take a risk putting that into our body. And with something that we don't know anything about, that risk is a lot greater. So I think education's key.
Yep.
The last one is transparency. And because I love puns, as you would know, I'm a bit of a, I'm a jokey kind of girl.
Yes.
Is that I often like to say that we have a lack of transparency. It's a smoky color that surrounds vaping, right? It's very gray. We can't see things really well. There's lots that's happening in the shadows. So the problem is because the regulation is vague, because nothing's really black and white about it, there's lots of ways that people can get around things. And there's lots of things that are being said that aren't necessarily true or investigated. So, you know, some people would say, oh, the way to stop a lack of transparency is just to make it all regulated. But I think even with legal substances that we have, there's still lots of transparency around those as well. So, yeah, I think those big three things are ways that we can support those that we know, regardless of where they're at in their vaping journey.
And as you mentioned, it's still relatively young, this industry and the challenges that they're facing.
Yep.
What makes this so appealing to young people? Is it the fact that it's the smoke, you know, you can hide it from people? Is it the light that lights up at night? Is it the flavors? What is this thing?
It's marketed to young people.
Yeah.
And if you look at some of the examples of the advertising material, it's drawn up with young people in mind. It's put out there as fashionable, as cool. But you can also say that it does connect young people and adults as well socially. Smoking has become, you know, there's lots of stigma associated with traditional tobacco smoking, like old school smoking, right? Is that you go off to that smoking area, you're not allowed to be where we are. That's gross, it's dirty, right? It's a very different space to what it was 20 years ago. Whereas the ability with vapes is because it's so quick and because it doesn't smell in a certain way. And there's also this idea of like, oh, I'm not giving people second degree smoke. We don't know that yet either, right? It could have impacts upon other people. But this whole idea, it's like, yeah, it's much more trendier and cooler than old school smoking now to sit around in a circle and all vape together. We can talk about the really cool flavors like, hey, have you tried that one yet? Oh, that's a really cool brand to use. And I find that's much more efficient. That there's it's new technology, so that's interesting and cool. But it's a new youth subculture. And I think that's what we need to see is that just like certain things like the Beatles, right? We're a youth subculture and different types of music and other different types of fashion trends and all that as well, is that vaping is a lifestyle choice, but it's also a fashion choice. And it's also a form of expression as well. So it's got a lot to do with youth subculture too. So it is cool.
Mm. Is there a law against this?
There are.
Is it illegal if someone sees a 15-year-old kid with a vape?
Yeah, but it's also illegal for a 15-year-old to be drinking.
Yeah.
It's so in Australia anyway. So look, I think a lot of the time people are picking their battles as to what they actually go after. Schools are having a notoriously difficult time with it because their use is like doubling.
Yeah.
So many young people are using it. And so they're kind of restricted. And when you have a vape shop open up near a school, you kind of go, oh, it's like a, you know, it's even like a McDonald's opening up across from the school, right? There's a market. So, yes, there are laws. So you legally aren't meant to be able to just go into a vape shop in Australia and be able to say, all right, mate, give me some nicotine in a vape, sweet as, and walk out, right? Yeah. That's not allowed to happen in principle. Does it happen? I don't know. I haven't done a grand Peter tour of the vape stores in Australia. What we do know, though, is that people are smoking or using vapes in areas that are non-smoking. So it's like this blur of line. So where you might be in a public space where you can't smoke a traditional old school cigarette, people are still able to, use
on a school bus sort of thing.
Yeah, because it's more innocuous and it's easier to hide and it doesn't have the same. So, yeah, I think that's the issue is that there's lots of grey. It's all shades of grey.
Deals are getting done at schools in cubicles, in toilets, and you can't smell that they're even doing this on the school grounds. No. It's something that's, it is quite trendy, isn't it?
It is. Look, and it was still trendy to smoke, show my age here, to smoke when I was in high school, yeah. right? We used to have a PE teacher and his favourite thing to do was like to jump out and catch people, right? That was his favourite thing to do. And the toilets were, you know, there's a certain part of the oval, certain sort of click and things like that. So we're talking like the mid to late 90s into 2000. It was still trendy to smoke. Mm. And even when I was at uni, not long after that as well, but it changed, right? Like I'm in the generation that we learnt all about smoking and we went through yeah. all those stages and things like that as well. But I do find it interesting now that they've reached a new target market that they go, you know what? A lot of the really young teenagers of today and children as well, they didn't grow up in this environment where they were constantly learning about the dangers of smoking. So I think it is a marketing ploy and it's very manipulative to target our most vulnerable to go, hey, you weren't around when all you learn all this stuff. So let's, and a lot of people have compared it to the 1950s to say we're actually where we are now with vaping, where we were in the 1950s with tobacco.
You sort of hope we don't have to go through the same period. You remember when the smoking first came out and you see the old school commercials of doctors yeah. smoking and promoting the brand yeah. and
decrease the size of your baby.
Yeah.
Exactly. How convenient.
It's yeah. like, you know, this doctor recommends this brand yes. and, yeah. and you're like, and then you see, you know, once the science catches up and all of a sudden, no way, you know, everyone's stopping it. And do you think that will happen a lot quicker with vaping?
I hope so. But I also, you know, like the optimist in me goes, oh, let's not get to that stage where we yeah. need that level of intervention. But it worries me that we might. And I think people underestimate the potential or the capacity of how big vaping can get. So an example is we've just had a vape shop semi open up around the corner from my house, right in the middle of suburbia, extremely random that it's gone there, hasn't opened yet. So I haven't been able to get in there like an investigative reporter and be like, oh, Peter Tempney's on the scene. But it just, the amount of kind of, and of course on our community Facebook page, there's been lots of opinion shared as you learn everything in life. And people's knowledge about what vape is astounds me, where people have a real mixture of understandings of knowledge about it, but also just that they just think, oh, not that many people do it, or that, you know, oh, it's business, it's no different from anyone else. And when I brought up the issue to say, well, I probably wouldn't take my son, you know, to a vape shop to get a vape, but I'd probably go down the road if it was a pizza shop and buy him a pizza. Someone said to me, oh, but, you know, you're okay about making your son morbidly obese and giving him diabetes, you know, and so they were kind of comparing it to that and saying, so it worries me when people think that something like vaping, it equates to just having a slice of pizza. Mm. And I just think that's a very weird space to operate in, to say how is one more worse than the other, because yes, I may not be an expert and I, you know, I don't have a doctor in the front of my name, but I'm pretty sure that a slice of Hawaiian pizza isn't going to damage my son as much as sucking back a whole vape.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Well, logically that wouldn't make sense.
Logically, but you know, it's a community Facebook page, so logic yeah. doesn't really stick there.
No, it's interesting the lens that people look at it through. Mm. Based on your workshop, what were some of the key things that came up and what were some of the findings and what happened?
Look, it was really, really interesting, and that's why I was really interested to facilitate the workshop as well, because I was like, let's get a group of people from different sectors and different spaces to come together and talk about this issue. And it was about to say, look, some people see it in the positive, some people see it in the negative. How does it impact you? And some of the real interesting things that came up was saying, and a lot kept coming back to young people and saying, you know, the lack of understanding the at-risk appeal of using, you know, of using a vape. But a lot of it came back to saying we don't have the evidence yet, but a lot of people are buying into that, oh, but it's safer, it's safer, it's safer. And at this stage, we can't deny that. We can't say, yes, it's probably preferable as opposed to smoking 30 cigarettes a day that you only have a couple sucks of a vape.
Right.
But I'm like, that's a pretty sad state if we're going into that. So, and we looked at a few different kind of media representations and hearing from, you know, people where they've said that services haven't been able to provide. But I think it was, the overall thing was, is like, it's really interesting that we're talking about this, but a lot about vaping is out of our hands. because a lot of it lies at the responsibility of politicians and lawmakers to decide where it goes from. Mm. You know, and it was really interesting to hear that different representation in the room of different ideas and thoughts as well.
You can see there's two parts to this. One is the people that were or that are on cigarettes,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to cut back, mm-hmm. to reduce the impact, to wean themselves off.
Yep.
But then there's this whole other market that weren't even on the cigarettes in the first place,
mm.
that are now keep becoming, not everybody, but using vapes regularly.
The new smokers, I refer to them.
Right.
Like they've, you know, it's creating a new market, a new industry that may not have ever existed before.
Yeah. How far do you think this industry will go? Do you think it'll be something we'll be talking about 5 years' time?
Well, I did say to the workshop group, I said, look, a lot's up in the air at the moment. Let's come back in 10 years. So, Sam, you'll be organising that when we all come back in 10 years and see where it's all at then. So, look, I really don't know. It alarms me about how much the use has just exploded over the last couple of years. So there's nothing that tells me that it's going to slow down.
Yeah.
But I think politicians and other kind of influencers have the potential to change the conversation to make people more aware of the risks. We need to pay attention to the science. We do have labs who are testing a lot of the vapes and slowly starting to work through and saying, yes, there are dangerous levels of these different types of chemicals. So we just need to learn more. So if I think we listen to them, let them do what they're really good at, the scientists, right, and get that data and get that information, I think once we have evidence to show this is dangerous, this is scary, then could we change it? But I do think some of it is out of the bag. But we do have the ability to, most importantly, help people make educated and informed choices about what they're putting into their body.
Mm. Yeah, we're seeing certainly around my area, I know there's kids, you know, in grade six that mm-hmm. are starting to, you probably heard of kids earlier, I don't know, but you're thinking, well, if 12-year-olds into this stuff and we still don't know what's in it and it's just, it's a bit scary, isn't it?
It is. And yeah, like lots of substances are very scary and it's not, and I, you know, some people would say to me, oh, Peter, shut up about vaping. There's all these other things that are far more problematic. And, but I just think the social justice warrior in me goes, when we market something where we're not really coming from a place of truth or in people's best interests, which we did see with tobacco in the 1950s and even up until recently as well, that's a dangerous space to be in. And I'm all for people, you know, whatever they want to put into their bodies, whatever substances that they want to use, that's on them. But everyone has the right to know what they are putting in and what the risk could be for those choices that they're making as well. And ultimately, that's what it keeps coming back to me for vaping is that those 12-year-olds don't know. But even the adults around them don't know either. And that's a very scary space.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And I just hope that we can get the education and awareness out there mm-hmm. before it gets too much of a problem.
Yeah. And that's the hope. And I think it's also just a lot more about listening, a lot more about understanding where we can be more transparent. I'm anticipating in the next year or two, we are going to be seeing a lot more at the federal level. But of course, as we know, particularly in Australia, that everything's done on a state and territory level. So I think there really needs to be a federal, state and territory and even a local connection on this and collaboration to say, okay, we have this problem. Let's invest time, money and resources to actually getting the truth out there more.
Mm. We can't even get time, money, resources for some existing problems that we know about, can we?
Yeah. Look, can we just get in the line though? Can we? I understand that we might not necessarily be number one and there's lots of other things I'd like to put in the line as well, but I'm just pitching that this should also be in the queue.
Put it on the agenda.
Put it on the minutes, Sam.
Peter, it's been good. I mean, this has gone longer than I thought. Which was no surprise to me because
you put me in a seat with a microphone and we had a conversation. It was your fault, really. You walked into it.
Listen, hopefully, I mean, other than your desire to continue to be a platinum member in 5 years' time,
yep, right up the front of the plane. Yep.
What exciting things have you got coming up?
Oh, look, I'm excited that I have some exciting stuff at the National Suicide Prevention Conference next week.
Sure.
So I'm continuing to hopefully be a disruptive force in that and really getting the lived experience voice and the living experience voice, and particularly those of carers, more on the agenda in the suicide prevention space. I'm really looking forward to the domestic violence conference at the end of the year.
Yes.
As a proud advisory committee member of that and just hearing some really interesting things. But it is, I am an optimist, but I think it's just people are ready to take action.
Yep.
And we've put up with a lot of talking over the last couple of years, and we still will. Like, there always is talking. I'm a big talker. But we are hopefully starting to see some action on things and more money going hopefully where it's meant to go. So I will hopefully just continue being a social justice warrior whilst enjoying the privileges of platinum class, hopefully.
Yes, you do. You get full benefits. If people want to get in touch with you, Peter, how can they do that?
Look, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm saying lots of disruptive things on there. So you can find me, Peter Dampney, on LinkedIn. You can check out my website, which is www.frommetoyouconsulting.com.au. And yeah, see me at a conference.
Yes.
I usually stick out. You usually hear me before you see me.
That's true.
Although if you do see me, I'll probably be one of the most colourfully dressed people in the room. So I love a chat, as you know. And so I look forward to, suss me out, come and have a chat.
Peter, it's been great talking to you. You're just such a bubbly person. I love your personality and I love the way you're approaching things, getting uncomfortable with the conversation, not being afraid of saying what needs to be said. I think it's great for the sector and great for us and everyone else that has the opportunity to come and listen to what you're doing. I appreciate your time and thanks very much.
Thank you very much. See you in platinum class.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode. Feel free to share with your friends and colleagues, and if you know someone working in mental health that you'd like to see featured on the podcast, please email any suggestions to us at membership@anzmh.asn.au. You can also stay up to date on our socials at ANZMHA on Facebook, Twitter and LinkedIn. Thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to sharing our next episode with you next week.